Chapter 20. You're lying. No normal human could survive the shit you've told me about. Looking down at Orlando's comatose body is Dr. Jackson, a small, round woman in her late 40s, who looked like she took orders and shit from absolutely nobody, fished out the bullet Tony had planted in him. Tony could barely believe it either. But then, he had survived a fall from a waterfall himself, so he was hardly in any position to go contradicting the facts laid out before him. Not that he planned on letting the doctor in on this little episode from his past. There was no need to tell her more about this than the little she already knew. Tony wasn't looking to drag her into this as he had done with Kaz, Lisa, or Clemson. Frankly, he'd been against the idea from the beginning, but Kaz had insisted on it. Not that he had any love for the bastard, who'd spent the better part of the last 2 weeks trying to kill them, but he was eager to see if they might not be able to get something out of Orlando. At the very least, he insisted, even if their own interrogations failed, they could all fall on their swords. A call to the police, explaining everything that had happened this night, might not be the cleanest way to wrap up the case, but given the body count and the connection of many of those involved to the already heavily scrutinized Air Force Academy, there was no way that Huxley and his cabal could just make this disappear. Inelegant? Absolutely, and not a plan any of them were eager to enact, but they had to consider all their options for now. Against his best judgment, Tony had relented. He never wanted to play the part of executioner, not even against a man who'd tried to murder him. Whatever their larger plan, it was clear that after being shot, pummeled, and then falling from a moving car onto his back, that Orlando was in desperate need of medical attention, and that none of them had the medical expertise necessary to keep him alive. That's why they were here now, in the emergency makeshift medical clinic that Dr. Jackson had long ago made of the storehouse in her backyard. An old acquaintance of Kaz's, who had always had a soft spot for the hard-bitten, caustic lug, she had opened up this emergency service to those in the know because, frankly, she needed the money. Glenn, laid out in the next bed, broken leg dangling from a makeshift suspension the doctor had thrown together before she turned her full attention to the unconscious Orlando, chimed in.
"You don't have to believe us. His body should be proof enough."
Jackson huffed.
"You may be right, but it remains to be seen if he'll actually survive this. The human body wasn't made to soak up bullets like a sponge soaking up water, or to take this kind of a beating. Even if we can patch up his abdomen, the damage to his spine from that fall may prove to be beyond my modest talents."
Clearly frustrated by the delicacy of her task, and her inability to fish out whatever else had ended up in the wound, Jackson raised her arm to wipe the sweat from her brow.
"Jesus, Kaz. Where did you find these mutts?"
Kaz grinned at that, shrugged.
"Stray dogs attract stray dogs. And me, I'm the mangiest stray in Colorado. You should know that by now, Doctor."
She nodded, though whether from an amused desire to play along or out of genuine agreement, Tony could not tell. Her mask, her goggles, and her cap all obscured the finer details of her expression. She didn't even bother to look at Kaz as she answered, but turned back to her work.
"Should have learned to stop asking questions of you ages ago. Nothing you tell me ever makes me feel better."
Glenn and Kaz both laughed to hear that, only to stop after a few seconds. Dr. Jackson's stony silence had convinced them that maybe this was less a joke than it seemed.
"Just like I'm sure nothing you tell me tonight could make any sense of what's brought four military men, who look like they were all trying to kill each other, driving a crumpled Jeep and a badly beaten SUV into my backyard operating room at 5 in the morning.
Kaz stammered to offer whatever lie he could come up with off the top of his head. He had never been good at fabricating and thinking on his feet about misdirection, Tony knew. But a raised hand from Jackson made it clear she wasn't interested in his excuses.
"Just because I'm curious doesn't mean I care enough to want an answer. Keep it to yourself."
Kaz harumphed.
I was only going to say that you'll want to keep an eye on those two when we leave. I won't burden you with the details, but the guy you're stitching up's a real piece of work. He's liable to kill you in your sleep, as easy if he was stomping on an insect. Yes, well, I hardly think he's going to be doing much moving, let alone killing, after all that's happened to him tonight.
Despite success fishing out the bullet slivers and bone shards that were stuck in Orlando, she continued on talking as if there was no difference between the task before her and the task of responding to Kaz.
Just don't tell me you've gone and roped me into something I can't get out of, Kaz.
Kaz shook his head.
Only way you'll get really stuck in it is if I tell you too much, or if that lug gets loose. Then why not just kill him?
She ventured, without missing a beat, as she turned to grab the disinfectant and the sutures she would need for properly dressing his wounds.
Too valuable, Glenn responded. I didn't fuck my already broken leg kicking this son of a bitch out of a moving vehicle just for the fun of it. Kaz is right. We're going to need monitoring 24/7 to make sure he doesn't pull anything funny. He may not look it, lying there all peaceful like Prince Charming, but that man's a devil.
Aren't you all? Jackson retorted, then cutting off the perturbed Glenn, continued. I've been operating enough on your kind here and in the field to know that even the best of you enjoy combat. Oh, sure, there's questions of duty and valor and justice. I'm not saying you're all sociopaths, but you wouldn't be out in the fields gunning each other down, even here, in the country you're supposedly protecting, unless there was something about conflict you loved. I served enough time in Iraq in emergency services to recognize that there's always something a little off about the ones who kept going back again and again and again. Nobody who gets shot and then heads back out to the killing fields the second they get back on their feet is thinking about the people back home first and foremost.
Despite the note of contempt in her voice, or maybe even because of it, Tony decided it was time to head on. They still had so much cleanup to do. There was no way they could just leave the bodies of Parker Moreland and his associates just lying in that field alongside two cars. Somebody was bound to see the vehicles idling out there and get suspicious after a few days, and, more importantly, they still had a call to make. Tony nervously played with the burner phone they had confiscated from Orlando, the one that Glenn had claimed he'd called Huxley on. While he was certain that after their late-night visit and delivery, Lisa would be moving to file some kind of report on the conspiracy, he was also sure that after too long without hearing from Orlando, Huxley was likely to get nervous and start marshaling his economic, political, and military contacts. If what Glenn said was true, he had already dispatched several enforcers to meet Orlando at a safe house their cabal used from time to time. No doubt, he'd be furious and frantic when his men showed up there and reported him absent. No, the sooner they pushed back at Huxley, the better, especially while he was playing from a place of ignorance. Gesturing with a nod of his head to Kaz, Tony then turned to Jackson.
I hate to drop all of this in your lap, Doctor, but Kaz and I have a task we can't delay on. Can we trust these two with you? How much are you paying me again?
She huffed as she put the finishing touches on one pair of stitches.
As per your normal rates, $10,000 per person,
Kaz returned, the tone of his voice suggesting that he knew she was about to double it, if not triple, the price. As if to affirm this, out of some petty personal joke, Dr. Jackson shook her head.
That's enough to cover the operations. Babysitting, though, that's going to cost you a little bit more. Make it $25,000. Total? That's not so bad. Per person.
Tony could see that if Kaz had been younger, he would have been on his feet in a rage. As it was, he was still hobbling up and spewing his frustration while Jackson fired off a line of self-defense.
This isn't a charity, Kaz, so don't go giving me your normal spiel about medical care in this country being too expensive and VFW benefits not being what they were. This isn't a hospital, and I'm sure as shit not your VFW liaison. It's a backyard butcher shop that could land me in jail. If your comatose pal's friends don't end up putting a bullet in my head first, that is, you want premium services, you're going to have to pay premium prices.
Tony had to stifle the laugh that was coming to his lips to save his friend some embarrassment. He could tell that neither he nor the doctor bore each other any animosity, but he also wanted to spare his friend's ego. He could tell that she regularly came out on top in exactly these kinds of verbal exchanges. "I'll cover it, Kaz. Don't worry. This is all my fault, anyway," he chimed in. A brief flicker of defiance flashed on Kaz's face before he must have thought better of it and nodded, turning back to Dr. Jackson to seal the deal.
"You heard the man. We'll cover it."
She hardly even looked up from the work she was doing as she nodded.
"If it was just you telling me this, I'd doubt it, Kaz. Luckily, you've got a reliable friend."
Despite himself, Kaz smiled at that. Tony turned to Glenn, who, if he was in pain from his uncomfortable condition, seemed to at least be enjoying the show they were putting on for him.
"We're going now, buddy. Hopefully back in time to watch you take your first steps, huh?"
"Don't keep me waiting too long," Glenn shot back. "Otherwise, I can't guarantee that the guy in the bed next to me will make it through the night."
Without missing a beat, Jackson interjected.
"Nobody is going to be doing any murdering on my watch if I can help it."
Surprisingly, Glenn offered no reply. Tony knew this was likely because he was too exhausted and in too much pain to spit out more than one or two pithy lines every few minutes, but he also liked to imagine that his friend's silence had something to do with a healthy respect for the doctor, who had established herself almost immediately as the kind of hard-bitten, no-nonsense professional that Glenn responded to best. Tony felt heartened as he stepped out into the crisp early morning air. Whatever they sparked by their conversation with Huxley, Tony felt as if it couldn't be any more harrowing than everything he'd experienced until now. God, he hoped it couldn't. They were in Kaz's Jeep, Kaz behind the wheel and Tony riding shotgun, trundling along in the lurching, half-functioning vehicle towards the scene of their early morning shootout, when the burner phone Tony had retrieved from Orlando buzzed once, twice, then a third time, before Tony felt brave enough to pick it up. It would be another few seconds before he felt sure enough of his words to speak, but he couldn't dither any longer and give Huxley the advantage of setting the conversation's rhythm.
"You're done, Huxley. You just don't know it yet."
Not the words Tony would have chosen to start off most normal conversations, not even the words he had been prepping for this one, but they came spilling out of him nevertheless. That was fine. This conversation was far from normal. The negotiation tactics he was generally so fond of would likely do little in this situation. He had to adopt a more aggressive, forward tone, let his opponent know just who the boss was.
"Tony Rodriguez, I presume?"
the voice drawled with patrician deliberation from the other end of the phone. There was something sick to Tony about the way this man could still keep up such airs, despite everything he'd done and was planning on doing. Tony had come across more than a few psychopaths and killers in his time, and it always disturbed him just how normally they could act, even after having committed grievous atrocities.
"May I also presume that you have handled my business partner, Mr. Orlando?"
"Depends on what you mean by handled, Huxley."
"Murdered, assassinated, exterminated, though given the nature of your relationship with him, maybe such words are not quite fair?
Please, there's no reason to play coy with me. I'll find out the truth, one way or the other. I'm simply curious, as a man who invests more than a little time into cultivating his associates, how you handled Mr. Mars."
Tony found the choice of words strange. Cultivate his associates? He might have expected that kind of rhetoric from a botanist, but not from a man who commanded the loyalty of hardened veterans like Orlando. Had he misjudged the bonds that tied these men together? He realized, somehow, that at least where the subject of Orlando was concerned, he would have to tread more carefully. There was too much he did not know.
You'll find out if you agree to our demands.
Nothing until that point, though. We're done playing, Huxley. We know your scheme. We've got Pickett and Moreland both on tape, confessing to their involvement in whatever it is you're cooking up. You may have thought this country would topple so easily, but you're wrong. Not everybody's up for sale, and not everything can be taken with force.